Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that expects nothing less than pure and scintillating quality each time it steps into a theater. But oh, how many times are we three disappointed? We'll shortly discuss how much, or even if, any of us was disappointed in the two films that we deigned to see in theaters this past week. The first is an exercise in pure meta, the Nicolas Cage vehicle, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, while the second is the determinedly sober Icelandic saga, The Northman. Let's begin this week's show by delving into the imagined world of a Hollywood star who needs no introduction. And that's because any movie fan, not to mention denizens of the remotest parts of the Amazon rainforest, know exactly who Nicolas Cage is. The actor famous as much for his outrageous screen portrayals in dozens of C-grade films as for the Best Actor Oscar he picked up for 1995's Leaving Las Vegas. Yeah, remember that? In The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, Cage plays himself, or at least a fictional version of himself, and not to give away too much, but actually two versions. Divorced, broke, and desperate both to get his career back on track and reconnect with his resentful teenage daughter, played by Lily Sheen, Cage agrees to appear at a mysterious guy's birthday party for a cool $1 million. Soon, though, he is recruited by a pair of CIA operatives, played by Tiffany Haddish and Ike Barinholtz, to spy on the birthday guy, played by Pedro Pascal, who, they claim, is a dangerous international criminal. What follows is Cage making fun of his image, which is always refreshing. Self-deprecation always is, even in service of a story that quickly becomes a cross between an action thriller and a daughter-dad reckoning. My only complaint? The direction of Tom Gormican, who co-wrote the screenplay, seldom rises above the level of Journeyman and could have used a couple or even three more levels of Cage craziness.
Be careful what you wish for. The monkey paw curls as you wish for more Nicolas Cage craziness. I mean, the idea of an action star, and I suppose you could argue whether Nicolas Cage is an action star, but he's been in lots of big action movies,
yep.
And we see clips from those action movies, including Con Air and Face Off. In this one—
Gone in 60 seconds.
Yes. The idea of an action movie guy kind of deconstructing his image isn't really a new one. I mean, Schwarzenegger did it back in Last Action Hero, and Jean-Claude Van Damme did it in that movie JCVD. And even this idea of a movie kind of writing itself as it goes along, because it turns out that the Pedro Pascal character has a script that he wants to give Nicolas Cage, and he says, well, maybe our friendship, because it does become like a bromance kind of movie in the middle of it, maybe our friendship could be your next movie. I mean, that comes right out of Adaptation, which also starred Nicolas Cage.
Yep.
So this is, you know, by nature borrowing from a lot of different sources. And I mean, this is a shrine, both literally and figuratively, to Nicolas Cage, not just as an actor, but as this sort of symbol of on-screen craziness. And this movie, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, is pulling from all kinds of places that I did not expect. I mean, they're referencing Guarding Tess and Captain Corelli's mandolin on top of, you know, the obvious Cage films that everyone remembers. There's even a call out near the end of the film to his version of The Wicker Man, which got a big laugh out of me and nobody else in the audience. So it's got little Easter eggs like that throughout. I agree with you, Dan, though, that the worst stuff in this movie is the action movie stuff and the stuff with Tiffany Haddish and Ike Barinholtz as these undercover CIA operatives or FBI agents, whatever they are. As the movie becomes more and more of a Nicolas Cage-style action film at the end, although I do agree with you that it isn't quite crazy enough to be funny, it just becomes really rote and pedestrian, and it's like, we get this. The heart of this movie and the reason why I ended up liking it is that middle section between Nicolas Cage and Pedro Pascal. They're funny because they're committing so intensely to these parts because they're these tough guys with these rugged exteriors who can't let their guard down. And yet they just have this like puppy dog earnestness towards each other. And there's a scene where they watch Paddington 2 together and cry. I mean, it seems like it kind of sounds like obvious stuff, like, oh, these macho guys doing non-macho things. And we've seen that a million times before. before. But I don't know, these two actors really sell it. And I really believed that they liked each other and that they were friends. And I thought, this is all the movie needs to be. And then it has to resolve its action plot line. And I did not care. I just wanted to watch them, you know, drop acid and run around the jungle, which they also do. So those segments of the movie, which I have to say take up a majority of the movie, are really fun and really disarmingly sweet. So that the meta stuff is kind of like set decoration almost. The heart of the movie is that relationship. Get rid of the action stuff and I think you might have had something really special, but
you might have had adaptation or something.
Yeah,
like
something. But yeah, this is a really imagine fun,
if another director had taken this on.
Maybe. And this guy, Tom Gormick, and the only other movie he's made is that horrific Zac Efron movie, That Awkward Moment.
Yes.
Remember
yep.
that
yep,
one?
Yeah, with Miles Teller and Michael B. Jordan.
And this is way better than that, but yeah.
I love the title, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
Milan Kundera might have
right, don't you think?
And that's talking about expectations. That set me up for
right,
know,
exactly.
Everything.
And I agree with everything that you said, Nathan, because I didn't really understand the CIA part, if that was supposed to be, because they were so miscast, you had to wonder if that was purposeful. You know, if they were like making fun of the earnest FBI agents or, you know, CIA agents that show up in these other contexts, you know, because they're always so serious. And maybe it's just my problem because Tiffany Haddish, I think, is hysterical. And so maybe my expectations are when she shows up in these films, and it's not always going to be true, as we've recognized from the recent past, I expect her to be funny. And she wasn't funny. And I think that was purposeful. But that sort of didn't work for me. And I agree with you. The movie just flowed best when they were just talking back and forth, Pedro Pascal and Nicolas Cage. And then there's a throwback. So we also have another aspect to this that we won't necessarily reveal, because we do have various incarnations of Nicolas Cage Cage to
Speaking
deal with.
Of adaptation again.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. So I enjoyed myself. I thought it was fun. It's not a perfect movie. I like to see people, Dan, as you pointed out, engage in self-deprecating humor. And this film was replete with that.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go back to the thing that I really took me out of the movie is the direction of this guy, Tom Gormican. I mean, there were just so many sloppy little sequences, and maybe I'm getting too specific. I should probably just stay with your overall thought, Nathan, that the middle section of the film works best because of the relationship between these two. But, you know, if you just look at it, I mean, there are scenes in which there's shootouts and stuff and people get shot and nothing comes of it, of each one of these. And it's like they just wrote themselves in a corner and they said, well, no one's going to care. You know, let's just keep moving
on. But once you appreciate fully the conceit of what's going on, I think those scenes that supposedly go nowhere made a little more sense to me.
And we have to also point out that how many actors could hold his or her own with Nicolas Cage, and Pedro Pascal, step by step, is the equal in this film. You know, this is a guy that he's not that well known. I mean, you know, he was in Narcos and in The Mandalorian, in which 99% of the time he is wearing a mask.
I guess that's true, yeah.
But, you know, but he really
but
is
who
a
hasn't been
guy.
Mostly wearing a mask the last couple of years?
One way or
so
another,
he's in good company. Yeah, I agree. I think that The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent kind of logically has to go where it does, because part of the joke of the movie is that it's an action movie that keeps getting distracted by the fact that it's an action movie. There's even a kind of funny segment in the middle where Nicolas Cage, or this fictional avatar of Nicolas Cage, has to break into a control room and do something, and he accidentally drugs himself and all of that stuff is pretty routine. We've seen that before. And any time it gets away from that stuff is when the movie really comes alive. And the entire time I was thinking about Nicolas Cage as an actor, as a celebrity, because his trajectory reminds me – this is going to sound weird, but it reminds me of Keanu Reeves' recent trajectory, because there was a time not so long ago when Keanu Reeves was laughed off the screen most of the time. He was not a well-respected actor,
no.
But he has just kind of settled into his own talents, you know, maybe as limited as they may be, and has become this reliable kind of steadfast figure and has become really well respected
beloved.
And admired and beloved,
beloved.
As this kind of figure. And Nicolas Cage is kind of the same way. He has made so many terrible movies. And they even deal with that in this film, saying like, well, you have all these debts you have to pay off. And yet he kind of has come back around to being this elder statesman of
zaniness.
When
you think of Pig, for example.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, he has so many great performances under his belt and so many misguided, confusing performances under his belt. And yet there's something about his, you know, his kind of winking self-deprecation, even in some of those bad movies, that I think have kind of kept his career afloat and have made him this beloved cult figure.
And we haven't even mentioned Neil Patrick Harris,
who
has a cameo in this movie, and reminded me, I'd like to see more of Neil Patrick Harris. I mean, I like
Neil Patrick Harris in small doses like that. And I think Tiffany Haddish as an actor sometimes works that way too. But yeah, I mean, the reason to see this is Nicolas Cage and Pedro Pascal together. Yeah. I'd like a sequel with just the two of them.
And that was The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at The Northman. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Find music and more May 14th and 15th at the record sale.
You don't have to be beautiful.
How long? Baby, how long?
Ooh, what a little moonlight can do to you.
Records, CDs, DVDs, equipment, and more are waiting at the record sale May 14th and 15th at Spokane Valley's Center Place off Pines. Open Saturday 9 to 5, Sunday 11 to 5. Proceeds help keep public radio programs on air with help from event donors, Strong Solutions, and STCU. Our media partner is the Spokesman Review. The record sale returns with free admission, free parking, and more. Event details and COVID protocols are online at SpokanePublicRadio.org.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the Nicolas Cage vehicle, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. Let's now move to The Northman. If you do even a slight bit of online research about The Northman, directed by Robert Eggers and based on an original script by Eggers and the Icelandic poet, novelist, and lyricist known simply as Sjón, you'll find stories that talk about how determined Eggers was to make his film look and feel authentic. This despite the fact that he cast Ethan Hawke as a Nordic king and Nicole Kidman as his queen. Thankfully, Swedish actor Alexander Skarsgård is cast too, playing the adult version of the king's son who, having watched his father be murdered by his own bastard brother and his mother being carried off, swears revenge. And that's basically the movie that Eggers, whose previous work includes such haunting studies as The Lighthouse and The Witch, strives to make. Along with Sjón, he adapts the classical tale of Amleth, a legendary figure from medieval Scandinavia and a precursor to Shakespeare's character of Hamlet, into an exploration of revenge and the futility of violence. It all looks good, Eggers having a talent for dark appeal, both visual and thematic, but as far as a sword and sandals movie goes, it evokes memories of a line declaimed by the late Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight. Why so serious?
Agree 100%, especially with the last statement. This had the potential to maybe be something more than what it ended up being, because I think these Icelandic sagas do predate, as you point out, Dan, Shakespeare and so forth. So the problem is this feels like they're not covering any new territory whatsoever until you think of this being the precursor of things that we've become accustomed to for the last millennia. But I think the main problem with The Northman is that it does take itself too seriously. It's so earnest and it's so stark. The landscape is stark. The story is stark. It's sort of told in these
acting is stark,
black and white terms. Yeah. I mean, I just kept looking at Alexander Skarsgård and saying, Wow, you really bulked up for this movie, didn't you?
He's a slab of beef in this movie.
Yes, he were that. And I think that it didn't come together in the way that I imagine the filmmaker envisioned. Because if you look at The Witch and The Lighthouse, those are completely different movies from this, for better or for worse. But it shows that he can direct movies in this sort of intense, interesting way. And here it just felt like same old, except for the set design. I have to give a huge shout out because I have never felt the grittiness of what that time must have been like to the same extent that I did in watching The Northman. The problem is that it's really violent, and so people need to be aware of that. Not necessarily in a gratuitous way. It felt
Of sequences.
Yeah, and then I was going to say, but then occasionally he does go too far. So what Nicole Kidman was doing in this film, I don't really know. Ethan Hawke was not in it long enough to really register on anyone's radar. It just did not work for me. And it's a fairly lengthy movie, and I think it does need to speak to you in some way to sustain your interest throughout.
I think there is some extremely dark comedy in The Northman. I mean, it's there. It's similar to the humor that he used in The Witch and The Lighthouse, which is this kind of baffling, you know, I can't believe that they're showing that kind of vein. And I think that some of the performances, including Willem Dafoe, who also has basically a cameo at the beginning,
and he was
also
in The Lighthouse,
and Nicole Kidman, I think have this kind of knowing wink of camp to them. I mean, Nicole Kidman is basically playing the Queen Gertrude role, if we're going to compare this to Hamlet. And I think she's having a lot of fun with it. I actually thought she
reminds me of that series that she did recently that was about she was the guru.
Oh,
she has
exactly
the same accent as she does throughout that 9-part series.
Well, I didn't see that. So this was new to me, I guess, even though nothing in this movie is exactly new. And I mean, I guess you can debate whether this period of history needs any dark humor. I mean, it was a very, you know, self-serious time. And after all, we do see our protagonist commit numerous atrocities before he makes good on this very, you know, kind of single-minded pursuit of vengeance. So I think I liked this more than both of you, but this is, at the same time, my least favorite of this trilogy of period pieces that Eggers has made. I really liked The Witch. I thought that that was one of the most astonishing debuts
in
recent memory.
Anya Taylor-Joy is in this film,
and
she was in
really,
The Witch.
That movie introduced us to Anya Taylor-Joy in a legitimate way.
And I thought
way.
She was okay in this film.
Yeah. The Lighthouse, though, is I love The Lighthouse.
Of course, I love The Lighthouse.
And this movie, The Northman, this third movie, you can't help but have admiration for the craft. I mean, Eggers is a stickler for detail. Like, every thatch on the roof of every hut is in place, and everything looks authentic, as you said. But yeah, I didn't really feel anything watching this movie except, you know, occasionally being wowed by the imagery or the special effects, or even, as I mentioned, some of the kind of weird supporting performances on the fringes. Bjork pops up. Not enough Bjork in this movie. I liked when this movie went really weird.
Yes,
I mean,
me too.
Just the fact
me too.
That it ends with a literal, almost nude sword fight at the literal gates of hell. Mm-hmm. You know, I liked when it went full on like cover of a death metal album.
Yeah.
That's when I liked it best. But yeah, I mean,
it needed you know, Nicolas Cage, I think.
Well, again, be careful what you wish for. But yeah, I mean, I enjoyed this as much as you can enjoy this kind of thing. But yeah, I wasn't moved in any way as I was in his previous two films, which I think are far superior.
Yeah, I just, when we walked out, I turned to Mary Pat and I said one word, overwrought. I mean, it just...
Yeah, but what do you expect from a movie called The Northmen that's based on, you know, this mythology? You want it to be a musical or something?
Yeah.
Of course it's going to be overrun.
No, I immediately thought of The 13th Warrior, which is not a serious film at all.
Or a good film.
But it has entertaining aspects to it. I felt like I was in medieval studies 101, and I was sitting there listening to the professor drone on and drone on, and I went, you know what? Okay.
In this scenario, is Alexander Skarsgård your medieval 101 professor? Because I think a lot of people would sign up for that class if that were
I would.
Yeah, well, okay. Yeah. Oh, I absolutely would too. You know, I'm still amazed by a guy like Alexander Skarsgård, who I still remember from Generation Kill, the HBO series. And this guy can do a perfect American accent. He was really good. Another person who I really liked in this movie was Klaus Bang, the German actor who plays the antagonist.
He always plays like the cool villain, even when he's like the protagonist of movies, because we've seen him in things like The Square, the Ruben Östlund film. He always just has this air of being above everything, and he's perfect for this role. We talked about the craft of the Northmen, and I want to talk about the specific people that made this craft that's on the screen. And all of them worked with Eggers on both The Witch and The Lighthouse. So the production design is by Craig Lathrop. The costume design is by Linda Muir. And the cinematography is by Jaron Blaschke, who got an Oscar nomination for The Lighthouse. And this guy has made these last three movies. And he's one of my favorite cinematographers around right now, because what he does is he takes eras of history that aren't really known for their bright color palettes and bold lighting, and somehow makes them seem vibrant and alive. I feel like so much, and I've complained about it on this show, and everyone's tired of me complaining about it, that contemporary cinematography too often mistakes really low lighting so that it's impossible to see what's going on, mistakes that for mood and, you know, like a glowering attitude. And this movie does that, but I was able to see what was going on. This movie is gorgeous. I mean, every single shot. And the camera work, it's stunning to look at.
And the landscapes are amazing. Yeah. And I think that you are right. I would tell people, see this in the Dolby.
That's where I saw it.
Oh, yeah.
Because this
see any movie that requires you to look at the screen in Dolby, because...
That's most movies, I would say, probably.
Yeah.
Every time those spears go, like, flicking by, you hear them right there.
And
Alexander Skarsgård is grabbing them all and throwing them back at his enemies. That was quite a superpower. I was impressed by that. Do you think he did that in real life, or was that CGI?
Oh, I'm sure he did it in real life.
He can do anything.
He can do anything. Yeah, right. And that was our discussion of The Northmen. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbin and Murray Pat Truthart and I discussed the unbearable weight of massive talent. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners, and we invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, remember these words from who else? Nicolas Cage. Halloween is a great holiday for any actor, if you think about it. It's all about dress-up and playing characters. So yeah, it's always had a special place for me. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.